Mickey Hart here, you're listening to the GAA Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Alright, you're very welcome along to the GAA Hour brought to you by AIB. Last episode of the year, lads. Was going to do a Christmas special here. We could still do a bit of a Christmas special, but there's just been a shitstorm in Mayo and I think we're going to have to talk about it. Mikey, Con and Dion, by the way, are here with me in studio. Where do we start with this? Were the lads entitled to give their side of the story? That's where I'm going to start. And I'm going to throw it to the floor and see who wants to pick up on it.
They were entitled probably this time in 2015. It's just ridiculous that they've lasted a year and 2 months before they come out and said anything. It was almost, for me, like reading it, it felt like they just waited until Mayo failed again and then sort of came out and said, like, well, look, you know, we're not the only ones in this, and it sort of gave them a bit more ammo because they talked about last year a lot, the season just passed. They talked about the attitude, the ruthlessness, the same stuff, and it was almost like leaving it a year just gave them a bit more of a carrot. They sort of poke Mayo that stick, but no, I don't like it. You know, speaking to Mayo people, they're all like, these lads are sending Mayo men, but everyone's sort of asking, what the hell are they sending this for? And
yeah,
everyone's coming out now and they seem angry about it in Mayo. As you said, it's a shitstorm.
They have a lot of sympathy in Mayo as well, it has to be pointed out. I see a lot of people defending them and saying they were shafted, they have a right to give their side of the story. And everybody has the right to give their side of the story, but I agree with Conan. They were sacked last year on the 2nd of October. Stephen Rochford was appointed on the 6th of December. So they had 2 full months, you know, to come say, these are the issues we have with Mayo football. If these problems are not ironed out, Mayo football is going nowhere. And you kind of go, right, okay, you know, because that is maybe for the best of Mayo football, to get your experience out there and maybe help the new manager coming in to know what's going on there.
But would it not have sounded more bitter if they'd done it straight away?
See, I don't know. I don't think so, because people were mad to hear what happened here, you know, and they took a dignified silence, got a lot of credit for that. So if you get a lot of credit for a dignified silence and then Mayo have a brilliant year, and what I thought was really, really stood out to me, they just talked about what the players did wrong. Like, there was no self-deprecation in that at all. Don't tell me they didn't make mistakes all year. And the irony of them accusing the Mayo players of not taking responsibility. Like, hang on, Holmes and Connelly, you take some responsibility. Don't tell me this came out of nowhere, because it's just, it's nonsense. But what they did say was, if that situation is still there, the likelihood is that they'll win nothing. That's the bottom line as we see it. So they don't know if these situations are still there. Rochford could have ironed all these situations out. Mayo had a great year, beat Tyrone, almost beat Dublin. Don't speculate that the problems are still there and drag up a whole lot of problems. Find out if they're still there. Maybe it's a really happy camp and the problems that you encountered, that you see as problems, maybe they're not there. So I agree with you, Conan. The timing of it, in my opinion, is completely wrong. And it doesn't seem to me how you could frame it as it's in the best interest of their own.
It was a dignified silence, but I think since the interview came out, I think you have to look at that dignified silence and now consider it as something else, as in they were waiting for an opportunity.
In the long grass.
They were waiting. They were probably hoping that Aidan O'Shea didn't get that penalty against Fermanagh. Mayo went out in the qualifiers, and that interview probably would have been 2 weeks after that. As it was, Mayo coming, you know, running Dublin to a point in an All-Ireland final replay.
Yeah.
Kind of, it made timing of this interview difficult, but they probably knew themselves they couldn't let the calendar pass into 2017 without having her speak. So they probably know this isn't perfect, but they felt they absolutely positively had to get their story out.
You know, when you look at what they've done, like, and you put this in your column yesterday, Woolly, like, when you lose, everybody has an explanation for why you lose. It's like the American election. It's like Hillary Clinton loses and everybody suddenly, even though nobody had foreseen this beforehand, suddenly everybody has an explanation as to why this has happened. And even though they lose by a point in a replay, It's like now that we can trace this back to certain attitudes of players and all this kind of stuff, and a bounce of the ball, and and everything is different, or the whole story is different, and they're the greatest players in the history of in the modern history of Mayo football. Yeah. So it seems like it's a big kind of, you're putting a lot of weight onto the outcome of one kind of a kick of a ball, basically.
Yeah.
And I think they are entitled to do it, but people are also, and they're entitled to do it any time they like, but people are also then entitled to question why they've done it. Like this idea that, this was done in the best interest of Mayo football, and nobody can wonder if it is or not, or like this is the definitive account and all these kind of things. People are entitled to question everything around it as much as they're entitled to do it.
Can anybody say this is in the best interest of Mayo football? Can somebody here make an argument to me to try and convince me that those revelations, petty, mundane, silly stuff, that any of that stuff that they said, if, like I said, it was after, in the 2 months after they got sacked, before the new manager, how can it possibly, just help me to understand how this is in the best interest of Mayo football.
Get Pam Sunday Mass said 15 minutes earlier next year, well then it served a purpose.
This is what pissed me off most about the interview, was that they offered no solution. It was just, they need to be tougher, they need to be ruthless, they need to get that in check. And well, they had a year there and they didn't check any of these egos. What did they do to solve these problems? It was just, they listed a pile of different issues that they apparently didn't even try to fix themselves.
They not try to fix this small clique that seemingly is running the show? What did they do? Did they drop any of them? Did they put them on the sidelines? I didn't see evidence of that. The team stayed pretty much the very same as James Horan had, and pretty much the very same as Rochford had, and similar positions, similar clientele. So what did they do to fix these problems? Or did they just bury their heads in the sand? Or did these problems just become big problems when they got the sack? Because from me reading the piece, and I wrote this on Sports Joe yesterday, I didn't see anything in that piece, barring one or two little things that you might say cross the line. But this is a panel of 30 individuals over the course of a year.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's issues. Like, you could write a book on the small, petty little nonsense things players get annoyed about.
And stuff that they didn't seem to understand. Like, you know, they used the Des Jennings example, bringing in a psychologist who also backed up their idea that Mayo weren't ruthless enough. And of course that didn't go down well with the camp. Like, this is a guy coming from outside, and you're supposed to be this tight-knit group. You're supposed to have the siege mentality. And then when you have, and not only your manager, but to bring in someone else to tell you you're not tough enough, that's going to be great with players. And the thing that sort of annoyed me most was that they, Mayo have lost to better teams than them. It's not like a mental thing, really. Like, I know they could have won, but they have lost to better football
teams. They're playing above the sum of their parts. They're playing better than the sum of their parts, as far as I'm concerned. Like, they're batting above their weight coming up against a team like Dublin, for example. You know, and how can you say a team that consistently almost beats the odds against a better team can have so many of these bloody issues? And the gas thing about it is the other team held up as this example of the greatest run squad and no egos, and Jim Gavin runs a tight ship. Jim Gavin, I'm guaranteeing Jim Gavin would have all those sorts of issues of players complaining about meal times, but Jim Gavin would actually discuss with his players when best to have meals. Kieran, I'm thinking of using you in a different role. What's your thoughts on that? Let's come up with this together. 100% that's
He'll
a good
facilitate.
Manager. Well, Jim Gavin is a facilitator, but I don't think Jim Gavin rules with an iron fist and pisses players off, because he absolutely doesn't. Yeah. He's a good manager and he deserves a lot more credit than to say that he runs like an army style camp.
But isn't that the point overall, that every the universal thing about management is that you're either kind of plausible to your players or you're not. So if you're Jim Gavin and your players believe in you, you can do these things and you can alter things and you can discuss things, and players buy into it. Whereas if you don't, the smallest things can seem petty, but they're the things that players take issue with. But actually what they're really taking issue with is something else. And as you said in the piece, like, you know, David Moyes at Manchester United and Chips, the stuff that came out about Van Gaal at United.
Yeah, they're good
after
examples.
After he left. And you look at them and you could take them from one side, you could look at it and think, you know, God, these players are prima donnas and they're egotistical and they can't take the smallest bit of advice or direction. But from the other point of view, it's players thinking, we're not really sure we buy into this guy.
Yeah.
And we're questioning everything. And it happened, I remember it happened years ago with Ireland and Brian Kerr when he was manager, and there were some players in the squad who didn't really buy into some of the stuff Kerr was trying to get them to do, and you'd hear what he was trying to get them to do and you think, why don't they buy into this? But they weren't buying into it for whatever reason, and once you have that friction, it's, you know, a lot of the
once
time
you're asking the question, once, that's,
yeah, yeah, it's very hard for them, and that, it's like Jurgen Klopp and Brendan Rodgers at Liverpool. They sometimes do things that are very similar as managers, but one has the authenticity yeah, in some ways to get away with,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he's technically good at his job, so he gets away, yeah, with this stuff, and players believe in him. But it's like, all when you don't believe in a manager, every little mistake they make is highlighted. Like, this is like a bubble, inter-county squads now. They're together nearly 5 of the 7 days. And you think of shows like Big Brother, you know, at the start when it was a proper social experiment, and like they could have a blazing row about dishes or something, and you're looking at it going, would you ever cop on? But that's the bubble they're in. And you can't see it. Little things become big things, and managers have to deal with that. And especially, like I said, when you don't believe in the manager. All these, like the Palm Sunday 15 minutes. Now, this meal could have been a talking point anyways, as in it's too close to the match. We don't know. And then the 15 minutes. That 15 minutes could have become a huge issue. That, and you're looking from the outside going, ah, lads, come on. But like, that's just a little symptom of the bigger problem. And the bigger problem is that the players didn't hit it off with these two lads. That's very, very, yeah, very obvious. And that's where all the problems are after stemming from.
I tell you what would have probably really got some of their gears as well going. This comparison he kept making with Kerry and Dublin. That won't, yeah, cut it in Kerry. That won't cut it in Dublin. Who cares? Like, this is Mayo. Like, that. I remember we used to have a manager. He was so annoying. Like, he'd call you in after every drill, and like, you'd be busting your balls, giving up your time, coming back from Belfast to train, and he'd call you in and say, they would laugh at you for doing that in Lavi. And after a while, you're just like, go pass off to Lavi. And I'm like, you know, we're here, we're giving you the time. We don't care what they're doing. We want to be your own team.
Yeah. And I think those comparisons would start grinding on players. You don't have All-Irelands. Look at what they're doing. And you have examples. There's been trouble in Kerry loads of times. They hold Kerry up in this esteem when Kerry, like, squads 100% have problems. The one example I want to pick out, which really bothered me in this real old school idea of Aidan O'Shea wanting to do the toughest trade. What's wrong with Aidan O'Shea wanting to do the toughest trade? Number one, he's going to get paid for it. It's nice exposure. We're amateurs. It might help his career to higher his profile. There's a life outside football. There's a life-work balance that you have to get right. Now, Holmes or Kennelly, I'm not sure which one it was, saying, nothing else should be in your mind, only winning and all that. Like, yeah, go away, will you? Like, yeah, that's such an old-school nonsense thing to say. Brendan Maher, the Tipperary captain, did the toughest trade earlier this year. Michael Ryan gave him permission. And a manager who has enough confidence in his own ability to say, Brendan, you're my captain. Nice opportunity for you. Go away and enjoy that. Brendan Maher, captain Tipperary, to win in All-Ireland. So stop this bullshit, yeah, that the toughest trade. That's just you, those managers, and not even asking Aidan, this is why we're doing it. Just rang the producers and cut Aidan completely out. Like, that's treating players like a bloody child. And like, I mean, you can see so many examples of how they would really get under players' skins. Like, yeah, their man management was awful.
That was atrocious, I thought. Actually, yeah, you're exactly right. It's like, you're treating him like a child. Like Brendan Maher did the toughest trade, had no effect on him. I remember he did a video with Sports Show. He did a carpool karaoke video, which is beautiful. You should all look it up. My singing voice is wonderful. Almost as good as yours, Woody. And it didn't have any impact on him. So for Holmes and Kennelly to say that...
You could have nothing else in your life, on your mind, 24/7, you have to be thinking of an All-Ireland. Give me a break. That's counterproductive completely.
Yeah.
The flip side of that is that people like Jim McGuinness have succeeded with that sort of mentality. And like, I remember reading that book, This Is Our Year, Declan Bogues. And, you know, Kevin Cassidy's talking throughout the whole time. Couldn't see anyone doing this for longer than a year. Couldn't last for a year, like, longer than that. And then, of course, he wants to come back then in the second year, but he doesn't get the opportunity. But Jim lasted 4 years with that sort of real, I don't know what you would call
it. Still, Jim's reasonable. Jim wouldn't cut a player out. What Jim's brilliant ability is having a really close relationship with his players, and he'll explain his reasons to you. He won't tell you you're not doing it. Like, Jim is not a Brolly can call him a dictator. He's absolutely not. He might run a tight ship, but he'll give you plenty of good reasons why he doesn't want you to do it, and he'll explain it to you, and you'll be like, all right, okay, now that you've treated me like an adult and I know the reasons for it, it's not, Jim McGuinness wouldn't say, go away, if you want to win in All-Ireland, don't be coming with me with this kind of stuff. Like, that's not the way to deal with it. Just quickly before we move on, I thought that Kerry bullied Mayo in the Gaelic grounds. I thought that jumped out at me as in, and especially they said, this is the message that we made to the squad from the start. So this wasn't just a one thing. This was obviously from the start, and this was a continuous message that they were given to them. Ye were bullied. Yeah. Now, I know from the minute James Horan took over Mayo, is he wanted to get the idea that Mayo would be bullied out of that squad. And in fairness to him, he developed a really hard edge to them. They're bloody strength and conditioning, they're strong physical men. And from what I saw with James Horan, Mayo did the bullying. And Mayo prided themselves on doing the bullying. The Colm Boyles, the Lee Keegans, the Aidan O'Shea's, they bullied teams. Yeah. And they hated that perception of them before James Horan. So these lads are coming in. And their answer to them losing in heartbreaking fashion to Kerry, you know, after should have won the first one, that is that you were bullied. And they consistently tell them, oh my God, I would imagine players are going, what are these two clowns on about?
Not only is it wrong, it's really annoying to hear that, especially in the first meeting. It's really disrespectful to the work that had gone on before, and the work was good. Everyone recognised that they were so close. So you don't need to come on and say, that was bullshit, here's the way it is now, especially when it's something that's completely wrong.
Does the interview then reveal like why they were, you know, didn't ever actually create a relationship with the Mayo players? Because there is that absence of kind of, you know, self-reflection and self-awareness.
There is no self-reflection. And this is the stick they tried to beat the players with was this meeting that they had with them. And I've been in so many of these meetings. Their players are sent away into groups of four or five, and there's different topics that you have to write reasons for. And one would 100% be every meeting, mistakes the last management made. And you put fill them down because the new management collect up all the answers and they use this to work with. Let's not make the same ones, and it's food for thought. So 100% the Mayo players would have put some stuff down.
It's supposed to be a safe space, so that's completely confidential. 100%. This never leaves these four walls.
Yes, and there's a massive bond and a massive, this is a completely private conversation. So to use that as a stick to beat them with and leave in just one or two reasons the players felt they made mistakes. Like they did, I would say the players wrote down more than that. But these are two, and it was like the players didn't take responsibility. And the whole bloody piece with these two men, they never once took responsibility for anything. Like, is this the most unusual situation that these fellas cannot see any mistake they made, yet they're sacked?
They did it in the piece, admit that they made mistakes in the Dublin game. Didn't tell us what it was.
No, they didn't say what it was.
But they just said they can hold their hands up and admit their mistake. But they didn't actually tell us what that mistake was.
Mm. Yeah. No, look, it's definitely a weird one, and I hope it goes away. But see, the author of the piece is writing again in The Independent today, and he's almost like he won't let it go. This same journalist, I have to give this a mention, is he wrote a lot of pieces about Laois, team I played on, because he wrote Mick O'Dwyer's book. And he used to write a lot of pieces painting the Laois squad, you know, not in the most complimentary light, that we were dictating training to Mikko, that, you know, we were pretty much a bit too big for our boots. So there are a lot of similarities between that situation and the Mayo situation now. And it really used to bother me because 100% we never told Mikko how to do training. Like, the game changed from being amateur to professional almost in the 4 years Mikko took over us. So we asked him for a weights program. Everyone else was doing weights. Nutritionist, sports psychologist, just everything that's now taken for granted in a inter-county squad. Mikko said yes to one or two of them, said no to one or two of them. But this isn't the picture that was being painted. If you put it in that context, yes, we tried to change things. But it's not like telling the greatest manager of all times, look, your training's terrible, which was absolutely not the case. But anyways, I keep this long story short. He wrote one of these things in The Independent before. In my previous job, I used to write for The Independent. So I wrote a piece in contrast to what he'd said. I put context on everything that he'd been writing. I said he doesn't know the full story. The Independent refused to publish it. So, like, I mean, this is what you're dealing with here. I actually confronted this journalist in Croke Park about this situation, said to him, you're Laois bashing again in a joking manner, and can I come here and I'll explain to you exactly what went on. He told me in very unpolite fashion where to go, that he has absolutely no interest in hearing what I have to say, and made a little bit of a scene that people were actually looking, pretty much tried to put me in my place. Didn't want to hear the other side of it at all. So it's no surprise to me that he won't let this go, and it's always the player's fault. Like, it's not always the player's fault. That's an old way of looking at things. And managers now, modern managers, take players' opinions on board. And it's not my way or the highway. It's not the army that they're in. Players are doing this voluntarily, and they're very busy lifestyles, and they don't want to be dictated to when they get to training.
Yeah, that's in defence of the journalist in that sense. Like, if you get a story like this,
I'm not listening to any defence.
No, we're going to be cut now. I'm going to be being dragged out of here. Let me speak, Willie. Give me my microphone back. No, if you get a story like this, you are going to print it. I understand that, and there is always this tendency to kind of blame feckless players and look at players' weaknesses and stuff like that. But I think if you get something like this, you are going to run with it, and if you've got a close relationship with Mick O'Dwyer and these kind of things, it's probably natural that you see what they're, you know, where they're coming from a lot. But I think in this instance, I think, you know, there was. I don't know any journalist who wouldn't say I'm not going to sit down with the Mayo former managers and hear their side of it.
Yeah, well, this, like me, I'm totally on the player side of this. If Pat Holmes and Noel Kennelly met me in a public setting and invited me to see their side of it, like, I 100% would say yes, I'd love to hear your side of it. Like, that kind of attitude is in, I'm right, I don't want to hear it from you. that's disappointing, to say the least.
The whole thing came through the prism of this outdated idea that player power is some kind of terrible threat to the GAA, and let's be honest, that horse is bolted. Players are going to have more and more say in who their managers should be, and they probably should, because they're the best informed people in any county as to who their managers should be. As long as they're not too myopic about it, they absolutely should have a vote on any committee that's picking a manager. I believe if they're serious about it, if they're that committed, as these Mayo players have proved over a decade and more, they are that dedicated and they know what they need, absolutely they should have a say in it. And it isn't the greatest threat to the GAA since Garrison Games. It just isn't. So you just have to get over it.
That's like the idea that, you know, they got a lot of criticism last year because this is a year old story, and when they got rid of the manager, same with the Galway Hurlers as well, like, this idea that they should just go along with what they're given, and who do they think they are? They're only players. They have to play for the county. They think there should be a better man in charge. They'd be mad not to say, get someone else in. But it does sound to me, Wally, like a lot of egos need checked and leashed.
Yeah, well, look, you could have a point. There's no point to say. Look, there's egos in every squad, and managers are supposed to manage egos. Like, I mean, if you didn't have egos in a squad, you'd be thinking, what kind of a bloody squad do I have? It's a diverse selection of different personalities. I think so. I think genuinely think some people want 30 robots who have no opinions, who have no personality, who have no bloody spark about them, and do what I say. That just doesn't work. Mikey, a shout out to Joe Sheridan after all that. You're in the Goalkeepers Union and you think this is the greatest idea that's ever...
It's a disgrace. There is a way to become a goalkeeper, right? You're a shit corner forward at under 14. You have a growth spurt and they look at you different and say, kick that ball off the ground there. If you get it past the 21, disco. You're a goalkeeper. That's how it works. You do not have a successful career as a... All-star. Is he an all-star? Joe, ever an all-star?
No, I don't think he's
okay.
An all-star.
As a not all-star forward for Meath, and then decide after a 3 or 4 year hiatus to come back as a goalkeeper. We had Armagh trying it this year. It's bullshit.
It's disrespectful to every goalkeeper that has served his trade since goalkeepers are, Mickey's right, goalkeepers are supposed to fail at under 12, under 14 level outfield, and then they're supposed
that's
to
that's a natural
lick,
order of
yeah,
things,
lick their wounds and go, right, I understand my position here and I'm going to have a go in goals, because let's be honest, most outfield players could play in goals.
Yeah, but you have to be bet down mentally and you have to really have given up on life and you have to be able to take the slings and arrows. You know, that's been a goal. I don't think Joe Sheridan's up to it.
I've been involved in the beatdown mentally process, trying to get players to accept that they're going to have to stay in goals. But gee, it's bloody tough. Like, and I always remember saying, "Oh, you're really good in nets. You know, you should stick to being a goalkeeper." But it's just every single week you're trying to convince young lads they stay in goals.
Yeah, but having said all that, now I know we're joking. Well, we're half joking, but
no, I'm deadly serious.
10% joking, less. Anyways, I think Joe Sheridan could be an outstanding goalkeeper. He's a brilliant brilliant, brilliant kick off the ground. And when you look at Andy McEntee, he had Paul Durkin with Ballyboden, obviously saw the value in having a good mobile goalkeeper who can hit wings. Obviously that's the most important part of goalkeeping now, is being able to place your kicks. Sheridan can do that brilliantly. He's got a great kick and he can place them, and if he can do those outside of the boots to both wings that work so well for Ballyboden, well then I think, listen, it's a great, I think it's Andy McEntee thinking outside the box a little bit, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how it turns out, and I hope he proves you wrong, Mikey.
I'm boycotting all the games next summer.
One of the best goalkeepers I've seen, the best goalkeeper I've ever seen, Barry Gillis from Derry. Mickey Moore, just, he was a forward, he played in a couple of National League games for Derry. Mickey Moore just brought him in as a goalkeeper, and he spent a year, I think, as a third choice.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, he just turned into this brilliant keeper, and it was one of those ones. He's so, like, he has such a big presence. So any high ball, it'd be the same with Sheridan. Gobble up. Like, he had no fear at all when a ball went into the area. He cleaned everyone out, caught the ball, and his kicking was unbelievable. Yeah.
Fergal Byron, actually, Lee Shaw's star goalkeeper, won a Leinster under 21 as a cornerback. So he was a late bloomer, kind of. In contrast to what we're trying to paint the goalkeepers, but most goalkeepers are exactly like you described them, Mikey. Maybe the best analysis you've ever done in this show so far, at the last show of the year. So congratulations! All right, All right, up next, we are going to bring you some of our favourite interviews that we've done this year.
Fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens yeah. and it does happen, yeah. But I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving, and I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show didn't look great, there was maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out Terry, but unlucky to lose, like. Let's go! 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
AIB, back in club and county.
All right, welcome back. We can finally get around to our favourite interviews from the year. And the first one up was Joe Canning. Joe joined us on a Monday after Galway beat Clare in the All-Ireland quarter-final. Galway had taken an awful lot of criticism after collapsing in the Leinster final, Kilkenny, because they had collapsed the year before in the All-Ireland final against Kilkenny. So here's Joe talking about the criticism the team faced.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It was over the top. At the end of the day, as I said just after the game, we're amateur sports people at the end of the day, and I think people forget that if it's only a hobby and we only do this in our kind of spare time, when it comes down to it, that's exactly what it is. And it got a little bit personal, you know. And it wasn't just Jerry, it was other journalists there, high profile journalists, and you know, it did. There's no point in saying it didn't hurt. It did. We're under savage pressure, I suppose, going in yesterday. And luckily, we got the results. But I know the next day, if we don't beat Tipperary, they'll probably have the same knives out again. And it's just funny in this day and age, you know. You don't mind if it's criticism about the hurling and stuff like that, but when it's personal about character and stuff like that, it's a totally different story.
Which personal criticism are you talking about, Jer?
There was other guys as well that said a lot, you know, on social media and stuff like that. So it's, as you know, Willie, if I say it, it's only going to blow up again. So there's no point in adding fuel to the fire, you know what I mean? They said what they had to say, and that's fair enough. Like, we took it as a little bit of more, well, I took it as a little bit of motivation, I suppose, myself. Because a lot of it was aimed at me and a few of the other boys, so it sharpens the mind, I suppose. But I know as well as anybody that, you know, you're 6 inches from a clap in the back or a kick up the ass. So we know if we don't get a performance the next day against Tipperary, it's going to be the same thing again, you know.
Yeah, well, Loughnane definitely seems to have some underlying issues with yourself and Ollie for maybe not going onto the panel when he was there in his last year.
it's funny. I suppose there's actually a paper clipping from the 5th of October before we even played the county semi-final of 2006. It was the launch of the club championship, and I was quoted in the paper saying that I wouldn't play senior hurling this year. So I made up my mind long before that our county final ever happened in 2006.
Right. Okay, because that seems to be what he has, you know, he seems
to have. Yeah, exactly. You know, that seems to be the issue with. So, but no, it was made up long before that, don't worry.
Joe, I just wanted to ask you, you said it yesterday and you said it again here, that, you know, it's only a game, hurling's a hobby, there's more important things in life than hurling. I was wondering, is that a personal mantra you've kind of taken on recently, or is that kind of a team ethic that you're trying to instill?
I suppose, like, it was always the way I looked at it, you know what I mean? But even more so, even last year, like, I suppose I was getting a lot of criticism for not performing, I suppose, last year, but at the same time, I personally didn't think I was doing too bad. I added more things to my artillery, I suppose. My game has changed in the last few years. I'm not the person that scores the whole time. I'm more of a creator and worker, more so than anything. Now that isn't usually my role in the team, and people kind of get sidetracked in that. And like, I looked at it with all the kind of, I suppose, people saying I wasn't playing well with a pinch of salt, because I suppose my mother was sick last year the whole way through the year. And when you go home and you look at that, you put sport into perspective. And it's the same this year with Dad. So yeah, to be honest, there's way more important things. Like Fitzy there during the week got a bit of a turn, and he's back in the sideline again. Yesterday it was great to see him, you know. So if we were paid professionals and it was our day job, then for sure it's a different story. But we have to wake up in the morning again and go to work, you know. And it's funny, people bring you back down to earth. I remember after Leinster final, I was Tuesday morning, my nephew was out in the lawn and he was baking freeze with his socks pulled up, pretending to be TJ Reid, and fairly brought me back down to earth.
Pretty honest stuff from Joe there, lads. The TJ Reid one is an absolute classic. Like, what a way to bring you back down to earth when your nephew is pretending to be one of your main rivals.
It's tough to be, you know, any era, like we were talking about Mayo earlier, you know, to be the second best in the era of that Dublin team, you know, Joe Canning and a lot of that Galway team probably deserve an All-Ireland at this stage. The manner in which they've lost to Kilkenny on a couple of occasions has done them no favours, but we've seen in their battles against Tipperary, like, you know, that's a serious team, and they're like Mayo, they're so close to an All-Ireland, and Joe Canning is so close to the All-Ireland that his career kind of it needs, you have to say, like, for all the talent and all the promise since he was 16, 17 years of age, for him to finish his career without an All-Ireland will be tragic, and I hope it doesn't happen. Not tragic, but it would be a shame. And but you have to love the fact that he has a little nephew at home with his socks rolled up to his knees, keeping him grounded. That's fantastic.
He's actually very honest there about the criticism, because a lot of players say, oh, I don't read the papers, or I don't pay attention to that. He's admitting, yes, I did pay attention to it. Yes, it was way over the top. And yes, we were under savage pressure against Clare. So you don't often hear that kind of honesty, which was great from him.
Well, that's the thing, because it is the truth. Every player, you know, or there might be a minority who actually don't.
Small minority.
Very small minority who aren't aware of the criticism, but nearly every player, every manager, no matter how much they say they don't read it, they're totally aware of it. So it is rare for somebody to come out and say, this is, you know, it was big, and it was adding to the intensity.
Yeah, and it definitely did. And they obviously, shout out, because we talked a lot about Mayo, shout out to Galway, who did the very same thing, ousted their manager. and came off a brilliant year as well, almost beating. Shout out, you know they're listening.
Shout out to anyone planning to add some manager this winter. Like, go for it, lads.
The friend here,
I'm like a radio DJ here or something. Shout out to my boys in Galway there, text in all the time. Right, listen, we'll move on here because one of the big controversies of the summer, we're back on the Mayo team, lads, and it was Aidan O'Shea. We're back on the Aidan O'Shea team,
shout out to the Mayo boys.
Shout out to the Mayo. Aidan O'Shea's alleged dive, obviously this dominated the early part of the summer and the early part of the qualifiers. Aidan came on the show after Mayo beat Tyrone on the Monday, very lucky to get him, and here he is explaining his side of things.
I don't believe it was a dive, I didn't flop, and my opinion hasn't changed on that, unfortunately. That's what the people have people believe, and that's fine. But I mean, at the time, as a full forward, at the time that's where I was playing, I had an opportunity to win the ball in the full forward line. In that game, space was at a premium, and I felt there was an opportunity to win the ball in front of goal. And I was, to be honest with you, my eyes lit up, and I didn't even know I was in the big rectangle or whatever it was. I didn't even know I was in there. So when I turned around that there was a penalty, I thought it was a free. I thought it was outside the box. I thought it was further out, but I didn't even know that I was in there, that I was going to be winning the penalty. So the thought that I'd fall knowingly that I was in the box to win a penalty for the team is, for me, it's not something I would do. And as I said, I didn't know I was in there. So how would I do it on purpose? You know what I mean? It doesn't, in my own head, it doesn't make sense. So I know for myself that I didn't dive.
Yeah, and look, I 100% take you at your word on that. Can you see why people would think you did dive, going on what we saw on television?
Look, I think you can see from the television, it doesn't. It doesn't look good. It doesn't look 100% that it was. There was definitely a penalty, but you know, that's fair enough. But for me, I know. When I was running, my legs are tangled in his legs, and I got tripped. So that's my side of it. I can't really do any more than that. But like the camera show, it doesn't look great. Yeah, there was maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever. But like the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty. I was trying to go out and win the ball, and I couldn't get there. I was tripped, and I couldn't stay on my feet.
Because you threw your hands up, you know, almost like you were trying to, you know, make the contact a lot more obvious, you know, than it was. Is this a situation where you get fouled so often in games and you don't get frees that sometimes you might have to overdo it a little bit to convince the referee that it was a free?
No, I don't think.
Do you know what I mean?
I don't think I over. No, I know what you're saying, but I don't think I was trying to overdo. To oversell it or anything like that. I honestly was trying to go and win the ball. As I said, if what people can make up their own mind in it, but I suppose for me, as I said, it was an opportunity to win the ball out in front, and I tried to get that. This is something that hadn't happened in the whole game. There's some days I get a free, some days I don't. And on that occasion, the referee felt it was a free. He also saw a jersey pull, probably which you don't see in the telly, which I think is what he gave the actual penalty for. So I think it's irrelevant. If it's a free, it's a free, you know.
Aidan O'Shea is adamant that he didn't dive. The cameras didn't look good. There was contact. This is for you, Dion, actually. You're the soccer contact correspondent. Is contact enough to go down?
I think you can go down without contact. I don't think contact is anything to do with it in football. In proper football,
soccer.
Yeah,
this is a GAA podcast.
Yeah, you can't say soccer.
Playing to his audience. Here.
I've got an audience. Yeah. Shout out to my audience, my football audience. I think all these issues, like people always thought there was no contact when the player goes down. Like, there doesn't have to be contact for it to be a foul, for it to be something that impedes a player.
Explain this quickly.
Well, if somebody comes,
it can put you off your stride.
Off your stride. If someone comes charging into you to make it a tackle, the rule in football is to kick or to trip or to attempt to trip. It doesn't actually say anything about contact. You know, so you can actually just the action of going to bring somebody down. If you fall over or get out of the way, that's a foul. Simply, if I swing a punch at you, if I don't connect you, I'm still going to get sent off.
But Aidan Rushe- was Shea Cullen, wasn't it, from Fermanagh? Aidan Rushe didn't see him. He was behind.
It's behind him. Now, there was contact in the Aidan Rushe thing, but yeah. Okay, I shouldn't say dive because it's alleged. Aidan fell forward and it looked like he was being pulled back. But in fairness, Aidan makes a good case there, and I did push him on it, and he's adamant that I didn't dive. It was the only ball that I got all day. We were already a point up with a strong wind. It didn't necessarily need the penalty, and I did not dive.
But has there been a change in, like, in the way Gaelic footballers respond to tackles in recent years? Like, do they feel like if you're not getting what you should be getting from referees, that you're going to exaggerate?
Yeah, there is definitely exaggeration. Yeah,
well, there's a Tierney McCann example is the obvious one, where he had his hair ruffled and went down like he'd been shot.
Yeah, that's different, but that's not buying a free. I get Dion's point. Mm. Sometimes if somebody is, like, he has his arm stuck in trying to get the ball out, but he's fouling you, a lot of players might grab that arm and go down and drag him down and try and make the foul more obvious so that they get the free. Now, there's other fellas that just try to grab the arm and bring him down, and that's not, you know, there's so many little kind of nuances to it of how you win frees or buy frees.
I suppose in Gaelic football as well, their contact is kind of ever present too.
That's
so it's
it,
not like there's not a, you know, it's very rare that you're talking about a soccer situation.
No, you wouldn't be. Ah, you said soccer. Listen, we'll leave it there. Let's move on to the next one. We had Dan Shanahan on the show, lads, and we love honesty on the GAA Hour. This was Dan talking after Kilkenny and Waterford drawn game, and he's talking about dropping his brother Morris for the drawn game.
Yeah, probably the first fella to ask me that column, like, you know, and there's a lot of people out there, so-called experts out there, but it was tough, to be honest with you. It was extremely tough, Colin, and you know, to tell your brother that you're dropped off the panel or you're dropped off the team.
Yeah.
It is tough. It bones their lives. There's no point in papering over like that. It is extremely tough, considering that he done well in the previous games. Like, you know, he wasn't 120% firing, but a lot of lads hadn't fired up to last week's game. Like, you know, so it was hard. I won't tell you, but again, it's not about me or Morris or anyone else. It's about Waterford and the players that he's trained with. Like, you know, and he dealt with it, put it brilliantly, to be honest with you, Cullen. He took it on the chin, so he did, and he came out training during the week, and he was fantastic, to be honest with you, absolutely fantastic. And that's the way we're brought up, Colin, if I'm being honest with you. Like, you know, it's not about me or Morris or whoever gets dropped, or Paddy Conn was the same way. He took it on the chin too, went back to training. It was all about getting the performance in for the boys he trained with all year and trying to get Waterford to win.
Yeah, because I was reading a piece you did with Keith Duggan in the Irish Times, and you were saying that Morris being involved was a reservation you had about even getting involved as a selector. So, you know, that decision must have been difficult.
Yeah, it was. Jeez, it was. Like, you know, and, you know, it's not because it was Morris, but he's an all-star holder for him as well. Like, you know, you know what I mean? If I'm being 100% honest here, he's one of the top forwards in the country. Like, you know, and to have him not playing on the 4-6 and on the Waterford team, it's not an issue. And, well, I mean, it's just, it was just that the way it came, that we went with something different, and Morris had suffered in the end.
Yeah, you mentioned about his attitude there in training, and it seemed to me like his attitude was spot on. Is that the difference between this Waterford team and maybe Waterford teams you played on? Like, the talent was always there, but maybe that attitude where it's all about the team rather than maybe about individuals, is that fair to say?
That's very fair to say, Colin, to be honest with you. Like, you know, as good as the team that I was on, like, you know, we were absolutely fantastic individuals, like, you know, and rarely did we put it together for a team. Now, we did once or twice, Colin, to be honest with you, like, you know, 0-4 almost the final sticks out, and so it does. And again, the first round of the championship in 0-4, I think, again against Clare, so the one day I sticks in my mind that we always kicked together, we baked a very good Clare team, we hammered them out the gate above in Turles in the first round of the championship, like, you know. But again, these lads are different, Colin. It's all about team, Colin. And even when I was playing, Colin, when I wasn't getting the game under different management, I always thought of the team, like, you know. It was never about me or anyone else. It was all about the team that I was on, like, you know, a team I was involved with. Like, what could I do to make this team better, whether I was starting, not getting the game, or anything like that. Like, you know, I always thought of the lads that I trained with through thick and thin, like, you know.
That must have been difficult, lads. You're not only are you his brother, but we're not talking about a fella who's only scraping on the team. We're talking about Morris Shanahan, who's a current all-star and a bloody good player. And you have to go tell your brother, I sat in on the meeting and I was outvoted. The other lads don't want you at it. Like,
it's cruel. First of all, to anyone who thinks Dan Shanahan is some backward baseball cap wearing, short wearing cheerleader and he's not really a part of this management team, you know, play that. You know, he clearly is. But also, that's cruel of Derek McGrath. The one guy who votes for Morris to stay on the team has to be the guy who tells Morris he's not on the team.
I want no part of this.
That's really, that's a dirty
thing. Well, he's your brother.
That's an extra special reason to not have to tell him.
Yeah.
He's the only member of the management team Morris Shannon is allowed to hit if he wants to.
Well, it just goes to show, you know, the atmosphere in that squad, as in a fella like that can get dropped, and he came on and changed the game when he came on.
He was absolutely brilliant
and showed that attitude. And it's not like I'm a current all-star up yours, like, you know, the attitude is, right, I'm disappointed, I'm going to put my head down and I'm going to go again. And that's the sign of a good squad. But not many people would admit, like Dan did, that he didn't really want that to happen and that it was a really, really difficult decision.
Yeah, in a way, this is going to sound, it's going to be difficult to explain, but it's almost easier to drop your brother, just leave it there. No, but like, he's the one you can, like, you know him better than anyone. You know what he's like. He's the one you can sort of say, oh, come on here, listen to me a second, don't be going mad. And there's actually a reason for this. If just be like, you can justified a lot more to your brother, and he would take it better coming from you as well, and he wouldn't fall out or get a huff of it. I don't know, I just think it's a little bit easier.
I would agree with you in saying that was very hard to explain, because it was very difficult.
My brothers are different from your brothers.
He didn't do it very good. Nepotism is rife in Ireland. Like, this is anti-nepotism and this is not acceptable in this country.
I play football with my brothers, and he doesn't know that I'm going to go and tell him that he's not playing.
Right, listen, we'll move on, because the biggest rivalry of the summer was Lee Keegan and Dermot Connolly. I spoke with Lee Keegan in Croke Park after the drawn game, and I spoke to Dermot Connolly not so long ago, and the idea of being targeted and the idea of these fellas marking each other came up. So here's both of them and their thoughts on the whole topic.
Gerard's a top player, and we all know that. It's well documented at this stage, you know, and we've had great tussles over the last couple of years. I said the two of us will do anything to win on the day, and, you know, of course we had a few run-ins and a few bits and pieces, but that's always going to happen. You can see that over the pitch, there's bits and pieces going on. It's just not us two, but listen, he is one of the best players out there, and I suppose I have to go back and review what I done, didn't do well and did do well, and I'm sure he's the same. But listen, we'll have another crack each other in 2 weeks' time, another duel. So
the jersey was hanging off him at one stage. Are you responsible for that?
Looking at the body, I want to see what the body looks like. No, listen, again, just, you know, hitting moments out there, it's the pressure sport, so bits like that are going to happen all the time. So.
You do a lot of wrestling off the ball, and, you know, you're getting inside his head. Do you talk to each other, or is it just a bit of physical stuff?
Just physical stuff. Right. No talking at all, to be honest. Again, he's focused on what he's doing, and I'm focused on what I'm trying to do. I'm a defender, of course, so people always look to me trying to score a point or two. I'm more the type of, we're not conceding scores, to be honest.
Look, I just said it, and kind of nipped this in the bud. I don't want to kind of over talk about this targeting thing. It's not, I don't think it's, in my opinion, I don't think it's a big part of the game. But is all we're looking for is the consistency from the officials, and that's it, you know.
Do you think you get enough protection, though? Because, like I said, you were seeing, like, looking at the linesman, and obviously they're all mic'd up, but, you know, the message isn't going through of things that are going on off the ball. And do you think the forwards aren't getting the protection that they deserve?
No, I don't know where this is all coming from. Like, you know, it's if a guy steps over and breaks the rules, and the officials don't see
pulling and dragging, you know, that kind of way.
Well, yeah, the pulling and dragging. Some referees are really good at it, and then some referees turn a blind eye to some dragging and pulling inside. So if there was consistency there, you know, well, then there'd be no one giving out about it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you see it, maybe if you, like the NFL, if it was flagged, if you got to throw on a flag and went back to a TMO and they reviewed it or something like this, you know, then that's probably at the elite level. You can't do that all the time, you know. So it's one of those things. I don't think it's a massive part of the game. I think it's been blown out of all proportion, really. This so-called targeting. I think it's more man marking.
Yeah, it's man marking. It's the buzzword of the summer, really. Yeah. Do you think maybe it's? I'll move off on this now. But do you think it's more prevalent with you because you have been known to react at times? You know, you've gotten a couple of red cards, and people think that this is something that could potentially get inside your head. Or is that something that you're working on, you know, not to react to things?
Yeah, I mean, there's only so much you can take as well.
Don't say that. That's not going to stop it.
No. You know what I mean?
I know.
Yeah, I've learned to deal with it. Sometimes I reacted in a little bit more of a negative way when I was a little bit younger. But I've done a little bit of work on that with some people, and yeah, it's just to kind of stay in the moment rather than getting too carried away with what happened 5 minutes ago or what happened 10 minutes ago kind of thing. You know, it's just kind of staying focused and staying in the moment and try do the best you can be out there. You know, try to just be aware of the next player, the next ball, or the, you know, rather than thinking about the goal you missed or the guy that pulled you down or, you know, that sort of thing. It's just to focus on the moment rather than the past. You know?
Right. That's what you've learned from whoever you talk to, like, is in finding out the trigger points and when, you know, the reaction has come from. It's when you're frustrated, is it?
Yeah, you don't want to react to it, never. You want to respond and you want to have an answer for whatever happens in whatever situation it is and be able to park and then move to the next play or move to the next moment of the game. That's it.
Yeah, nothing to see here, lads. Lee Keegan doesn't think there's anything wrong with it. Dear McConnelly doesn't think there's anything wrong with it. So the next time these two fellas mark each other, stop doing player cam on them. And they're not much different than any other partnership marking each other on the team. It just happened to be the best players on the two teams. Leave the men alone.
I just wish Jim McConnelly had stopped bullying Lee Keegan. Like, everybody keeps bullying this Mayo team. It's unacceptable.
But there should be more player cam on them. Isn't this what people want? Like, shouldn't you like hype up these sort of these encounters? Like, this is what it's all about. Like, you know, I know it might go too far, but it's kind of, everybody is intrigued by it and fascinated by it, and let it just happen, and you know, and commentate on it and remark and interpret it. But it is part of the whole kind of the prize fight element of these big matches.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Who would be more for the player cam than the other between the two of them? Who would prefer that 70-minute player cam?
Connolly.
Do you think so?
Oh, absolutely.
Connolly's not. Okay. I knew you were going to say Connolly.
And you were going to say
Connolly for everything.
No, I don't know. I'm not sure which would actually prefer it. Connolly's up to no good with Keegan as well. Keegan offers one of
Mayo's.
There
was a black card.
Keegan does offer a huge threat, and you telling me Connolly doesn't block his runs, pull him back the same as Keegan does to Connolly the other way? I think it's a 50-50. Neither of them would like this.
Connolly let him in for the goal. He just let him go. That's how polite he is. He let him go run.
He got caught in traffic, yeah, did he not? Did, yeah. Yeah, he did. He let his guard down for a minute. But look, like Dion said, this is a huge... Let's hope they come up against each other again next season. And let's hope it's as good as this season. Next up is our favourite interview. Beautiful, wasn't it? Next up is our favourite interview from the year. I think we're all agreed on this. And it doesn't often happen that we get... The GAA Hour gets on a... Now, this is obviously our target for next year, is to get the GAA Hour on a winning bus and get the phone passed around the bus. And this is what happened when Tipperary beat Galway. It was the Monday. I rang Conor Sweeney. He was on the bus. He agreed to talk to us. I asked Conor Sweeney, is Liam Cairns there? Conor Sweeney brought the phone down to Liam Cairns. Liam Cairns was in great form. There's some singing on the back of the bus. And this is what it's all about. And we brought it to the people. We brought this to you. So have a listen.
Yeah, look, to be honest, I think it's a bit late in the season now. I think, obviously, Seamus has done... He's getting his games to Ireland and he's doing fabulous and delighted. And obviously, Stephen is working hard there in Ireland as well. He's not getting the game time he'd want, but you know, he was there with us yesterday in the Pro Park Hotel and he was wishing us the best. And you know, he's still obviously a big tip football fan, but maybe we might see him back in, you know, the near future, hopefully.
Yeah, it's definitely too late for him now, but I mean, at the start when he would have made the decision early in the year.
Yeah. Yeah, look, it's a tough one, obviously. You know, hurling is obviously considered very highly and strongly in the county, and I think it's led to any opportunity of making the hurling panel, they're going to go for it, you know. And they might only get the one shot, so it's hard to blame anyone for taking that opportunity, but as a footballer, we'd love to have Stephen back in the near future, and hopefully we will.
Yeah, certainly. And Liam Cairns obviously been a big improvement with you. Is he there on the bus with you?
He's there with me, yeah. Well, I try and... John, I have a word with him, will he, yeah?
Go on, bring the phone down to him there and we'll
get him on. One second there now. Beam. Hello?
How's it going, Liam?
Woody, how's it going?
Are you enjoying a few cans there with the rest of them?
Yeah, we're celebrating, in fairness. We're entitled to it, and, you know, I just want the players to enjoy it, yeah.
Yeah, some win, absolutely unbelievable stuff yesterday. There's the, you couldn't have wrote that script.
No, well, I'll be honest with you. Look, Woody, the script was that Clare and Tipperary bought the romance to the All-Ireland, and we were supposed to have our day in the sun and step out stage left. And, you know, my boys were not buying into that. You know, we were there to win yesterday, and, you know, we weren't reading the script. And in fairness to the players, they performed and they decided that, you know, the script didn't matter, you know. And a lot of teams want to do that, but my players did what they said they wanted to do yesterday, and I'm so proud of them for that, you know.
Yeah, there's a bit of a sing-song going on there behind you, I'm hearing, am I?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a sing-song on the bus, yeah, at the back of the bus. Those that are with us, they know yourself, Woody. You've been in teams now. It's organic. It's about celebrating it. They're putting in a huge effort, and they're entitled to celebrate when you do something. After the Jerry match, we just concentrated on recovery, and we've had two big wins now in a week, and I want them to celebrate it now, because if you don't, it's not worth doing, you know. And we've had this conversation before.
Yeah.
You know, you have to enjoy it. If you don't, it's just not worth doing.
Yeah, I was just saying to Connor, they're the best days when you're on the bus after a good win with a few cans, and the managers allows you to have a few, and you're probably having a few yourself when you're all in it together.
Yeah, that's it. And that's the bottom line, you know. I studied the science of it, and I've done the degree, but at the end of the day, you cannot really quantify what a win like that does and celebrating a win like that does, because, you know, the players need to trust each other and enjoy each other's company and be with each other. And, you know, they're not going to fight on their backs for each other if they don't have that. And I always try to engender that in any team I'm involved with, from club or county or any other team, you know.
That's the dream, lads. That really is the dream. And it's important to point out that Liam Kearns did two interviews that day. Liam Kearns, when Conor Sweeney brought him down the phone, thought, look, because obviously Liam Kearns, an ex-manager of mine, Conor says, here, Woolley wants to talk to you. Liam didn't exactly know that he was talking to a podcast. Thank God it wasn't live radio.
Beauty of unlive radio.
Why put the boot into Conan then as well?
Yeah, well, people might wonder where that little clip of Liam Kearns saying, and Conan, I don't know what game he was at. That was from the outtake interview we couldn't use, because Liam's language is a bit flowery and he was in great form. And then maybe we're 5 or 6 minutes in, and me and Dion were looking at each other going, does he know that we're going to use this? And then we had to tell him, so we had to do the interview over again. But that was fine. He was still in great form.
He was in great form, but the original was magnificent.
Great form in this interview, flying form, we could say, in the other one. But I think they just stopped for cans, and they had the bus stocked up, and they're coming off a great win. What a beautiful place to be.
I'm raging. I was on holiday that week. I would have argued long and hard to keep the original Liam Kearns interview.
We need to get in contact with him this week to see if he'll allow us to put it out.
Yeah, well, we have that Derry clip, but
that's good clip, very good talking nonsense.
The GAA are nothing but fair. If you don't want something in the interview, we won't put it in, and that's the way it works. Any plans for Christmas, lads, before we go? Because it is the festive season.
quiet family. You're not a big Christmas fan, Willie. You
I'm
said
not.
This to me on the
not.
Way to the
not
Christmas party
Christmas
last
fan.
Week.
No,
although
not.
You're, you know, at the Christmas party, you seem to be a big fan of Christmas.
It's not a big fan
of Rod Stewart.
It's just this part of the year. I don't like dark evenings. I don't like cold, wet weather. And Christmas happens to be right in the middle of this cold dark, dreary time of the year. And there's no GEA.
You're giving out about presents and everything.
Well, I hate that. Well, that's a disaster. Chris Kindle just added extra pressure on me in the job here as well, so I actually didn't get one in the end.
Are you going to sign us off with Rod Stewart? Because at the Christmas party in Galway, we had karaoke, and the guy set the whole thing up, and Willie comes crawling up on stage. It takes him about 2 minutes to get there. And eventually he asks the boy, can I sing Rod Stewart? And the guy's cracking up, because it's about the 10th time he's gone up. And he says, lads, if it's not on the sheet, don't be coming up and asking. And then all of a sudden, Willie starts singing Rod Stewart anyway. And he has to turn everything off, and Willie starts singing a cappella. And it's the most beautiful version.
Twitter.com/Paddy McKenna.
I did think he had nailed it. And I wasn't even drunk. I did think he had nailed it on the night. I was thinking, God, Willie's really got this. And then when I saw Paddy McKenna's tweet the next day, I was like, Just a little off.
Just a cappella, lads. You know, I got the key wrong at the start, and you know when you do that, it's very hard to get it back. You know that kind of way.
And the tempo. Yeah. And everything else.
Just everything, and then the pressure of being on stage. But look, listen, let's not get into this. Anyways, listen, we are back on January the 11th. Have a great Christmas, everybody, and we're going to play you out with the greatest Christmas song that was ever written. Good luck.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and
They regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.